Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Mike Armstrong podcast show. And we're lined up for episode 2 of Mike Meets Ben Chai. So Ben Chai is an entrepreneur, a serial entrepreneur, property developer. They call him the Doctor Who of business. And he is based in London, England, in the UK. So how are you doing today, Ben? You okay?
Yeah, I'm doing really well. I'm a bit worse for wear at the moment. There's an app called Clubhouse, and I was in a room till, I don't know, half five, actually. There was just beautiful piano music in there, and I'm a great fan of piano music. The lady was just very, very talented. So I was in there till just networking, yeah. But she played her piano music for until about 5:50, 5:30. And there was another room where it was somebody's birthday, and who's just an incredible, incredible person. And so I was up. So I'm a bit, if I look a bit like, you know, worse for wear, that's why.
Yeah, no worries at all. And the last time I had you on, which was only a few weeks ago, and we discussed your COVID product for eliminating, the virus in the air and that sort of thing, and other things in the air. But I know you're a serial entrepreneur and you do a lot more than that as well. For the listeners and the viewers, tell everyone a little bit about some of the other things you do over and above that. And if you want to give them a quick recap on what you're doing with the COVID product at the moment, then feel free to do so.
Yeah, so I'm a entrepreneur by accident, I think, because I would have been quite happy to stay in a job and work up the corporate ladder. It's kind of fun, but various things happened, and my first business was eventually in education and training. So that's just teaching technical concepts, so software. And networking, how to connect systems together. But today, you know, a lot of people have grown up with a lot of the software, and there's less teaching needed for those things. And a lot of the how-to stuff is online and in YouTube. So over time, I developed a property portfolio and have a large portfolio from that. Had a media company, and I'm rebooting that as well at the moment because that was sold. The education training company was sold. So those are my focuses. The products to get UK PLC back up and running. Those are the COVID and other viruses, by the way. It's not just COVID because they're expecting other epidemics to happen. And really, I'm very passionate about keeping all the shops and the office is open. So many people have lost their livelihoods as a result of what's happened. So this is very important to me. I've been adopted by a number of groups where some of the members, because they're mainly women empowerment groups, some of their members have gone through a lot of domestic violence. And as you know, the whole lockdown has increased that. Drug abuse and death through that has gone up. Alcoholism has gone up because people have just been feeling very lonely. So this is why, you know, the product that's what that thing behind me represents. I think it's terrible if we have to go through another one of those. Yeah. So I'm very passionate about that. But if I had a choice and there was no such thing as COVID and epidemics, then I would probably just be focusing on the educational products that I produce to help people get past all these, the people who teach business but don't know what they're doing, and they charge 10, 20,000, 50,000 pounds to teach what is really just branding and marketing. There's no business processes, and most of those people who get involved with these kind of coaches fail. Actually, they've got a very, very high failure rate. But their branding is so strong that people think, oh, they're fantastic. I Googled them. There's all these nice things about them. But if you're if you understand business, you would be able to do due diligence and go beyond the Google searches and find out what's really happened. There's whole books written on how they create these good kind of search methodologies for people to think they must be honest.
Yeah.
So that's my lane, acting and being on stages and producing educational material for people.
Yeah. Okay. And so what sort of areas in education do you produce those materials and all that, so that, you know, obviously once the COVID is sort of maybe easing off and the machines aren't so required, and or they're already fitted in loads of businesses and shops around the world, and you go back to the educational side of things, what are the sort of specialty areas that you concentrate on in the educational space?
So this is teaching people about business and business concepts. Now, having been working for Microsoft directly and indirectly, I used to educate a lot of people on tech and business. So I got to see a lot of the way they were running their businesses and why some of those businesses were losing money. So there was a lot of the education that I used to do, which was very focused on the other aspects of business. I have a diploma in marketing. I have been a sales manager and a sales director, as well as a technical director. So I can have a view of the whole concept of how businesses are run. And obviously when I started my own businesses, I used to handle my own finances. I have a maths degree and used to, you know, submit a lot of my accounts before it just became too much for me, and the business. So I've worked in kind of like every different area, including the not just the marketing from the diploma perspective, but I also have a diploma in journalism. So, you know, I'm very educated on how to write and put your proposals forward. And I used to run courses for a wonderful company called Learning Tree International, on teaching how to create winning proposals, and also, you know, that whole aspect of connecting with people, which is probably the core of any business, that connecting with people.
Yeah, definitely.
Mike, I notice you're playing with your arm.
No, I'm actually just out of my hands. I'm not playing with my, I was actually just writing then, not playing with my hand. I was writing down international, but what was I going to say then? Yeah, so I know you've done a lot of education and a lot of business, which is where your experience comes from. And it's the same with me. You know, I've done a lot of sales and I've done a lot of marketing. I've done a lot of social media and I've done a lot of networking. So I always keep in my lane of all the things I've done a lot of, because they're the things I've become an expert in. Because, you know, you don't just learn by reading a book or having the knowledge of doing something. You learn by applying the knowledge into actually the action. And then you learn by assessing and analyzing what worked and what didn't work and honing in more on the stuff that works. And then, you know, applying or pulling out the knowledge from that process, so that you've got compounded knowledge, if you like, of not just what to do, but actually when you do it, how to do it, and what results you get from doing it, and how you can tweak it to get more results from doing the same things. So I'm with you, you know, there exactly on there's so many coaches out there who are selling hypotheses, you know, they're selling ideas and knowledge, but no real wisdom and no real sort of analytical results driven data or knowledge, you know.
Yeah, they don't really understand implementation, a lot of them. So they'll talk about teaching you transformation rather than transactional. Transactional is implementation.
Yeah.
And that way they avoid saying, actually, I have no clue how to run your business, because I'm teaching you how to transform your mindset, which is equally important. Mike, I just want to touch back on some of the things you've just said. So one, you've talked about people getting education. And then two, you've said that the real knowledge you get in running your business is through experience. It's not just having knowledge. And yes, we have people who just got too much knowledge and they're armchair business people, but they've never actually run successful businesses, yeah. You know. And this is very, very important. If you are working with people, if you're after figure of 10,000 or 100,000, work with people who've reached those levels in those businesses rather than people who haven't. They may understand how to do it. In other words, they've got textbook knowledge, but they don't understand the experience, which is what Mike's talking about. The second aspect, which I thought was very important, Mike, was that you said once you're experiencing it, so you've transformed your textbook knowledge into experience, but then your experience, you find out that some things may not quite work. And this is the next really important point. We see a lot of these kind of people out there who profess to teach business, but they're teaching you a one size fits all. And frankly, every business is different. There are too many variables. And that's why, although you can get some education, it doesn't mean it will work in the exact way for your business. You have to go and experience it and then think, oh, okay, the book says this, it doesn't quite work. How can I evolve that concept so it works with the people I'm serving and the products that I'm working with? And the third thing I loved about what you just said is the compound effect of your knowledge. Because as you get better and better with your experience, you now are able to deploy that if you like, experience to other aspects of business, which is really important, because that's how I've been able to create successful businesses in technology, cybersecurity, hospitality, and media education and training, and take them to 7 and 8 figures, because I've had that compound effect of knowledge. So three fantastic points you shared in what you said, Mike. Really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, no worries at all. But like I say, I've been there and done it as well. I actually grew a sales team from 7 people doing $300,000 to 17 people doing $5.7 million over an 8-year period, which is 20 times growth. So I only ever talk to people about 20 times growth. I don't talk to them about taking them from 6 figures to 7 or 8 figures to 9 figures or 10. I talk to them about what I've done, because I know how to do that. But I also say to people that I can't guarantee that I could tell you how to do it in your business or your sector or whatever, because the principles are similar, but the actual activity and the actions and the analysis of those actions vary. Because like you said, time moves on. So you couldn't even replicate the same thing in the same industry, because it's not the same time. You know, you can't replicate people's exact experiences. So all you can do is say, this is roughly the way to do it, but you've always got to have the split testing, the A/B testing, the analytical part of it, because you know what always worked for 100 years prior to the pandemic in a lot of industries didn't work for the year of the pandemic. You know what I mean? Just because, so people could be teaching you something that was right up until a certain time, and then it's wrong. And unless you really research that and analyze that and be prepared to be flexible with everything that you learned, understanding that it's still knowledge and experience from the past, but it doesn't mean it's right for right now. And that's why you've always got to be willing to be flexible and adaptable and change and think about the market conditions and who the market is and all of that sort of stuff, because it's ever changing as the world is ever spinning. You know, the industries and the sectors are ever moving and developing.
Yeah, that is so true. So the concepts of sales are generally the same, as you rightly point out. But for example, if your business involves you going out and meeting other people and socializing with them, that's very difficult to do in an epidemic. And so you need to find other avenues to connect with people, such as what many have done with their virtual connections through Zoom. But there's also that kind of, how do I connect with people, 7-9 times, which was kind of the average if you were out there socializing with people before they think, Mike, you're an amazing guy. I really trust you because you're just so cool, that kind of concept. And how do you do that online or during an epidemic kind of time? Yeah. So. Totally with you on that.
Yeah, well, with what you just said as well, that triggers something in me. Well, that's why I take people from, Clubhouse to a different Clubhouse room, to a Zoom room, to a Facebook group, to a, to a LinkedIn, to an Instagram, because that's the same touch points, like as if, right. going at a networking event, and then you meet them at a coffee shop for a pre-meeting meeting, and then you meet them at their office and have a meeting there, and then you take them to a night out somewhere, and that same sort of relationship building and, you know, trust building, which is what gets you the deal in the first place, or it's what gets you the deal increased to a much larger value, because sometimes people enter at a low entry level and then they want to see how things develop and the relationship builds and the trust builds before they decide, actually, you're somebody who could do something else for me, which is maybe on a bigger scale. And again, people who haven't been through that type of relationship building, they don't understand that that's what's happening. But again, you know, on Clubhouse and Zoom and or online, if you can't do it in the real world, you have to replicate that type of social interaction and engagement by using whatever facilities and tools are available to you at that time.
You're so right. And you know, I love the way that you're sharing about the different touch points. As you know, you take them in one social media, you go to another social media, and you know, that's how, one of the ways to create those touch points in connecting with people. You know, you also shared something very, very important, that those connection points, when you first meet them, and you're talking about socializing, like just going for a drink, or, you know, in some of the other areas, people go and play golf with each other. And why do they do that? It's because you want to see what people are like in other environments. What are their value systems, without talking about business? I think one of the amazing things about why Mike and I connected is we're not going in and selling anything. Like Mike said to me prior to this podcast, he said, "Ben, do you want to share things that you've got to sell right away?" And I said to Mike, "Well, honestly, I don't have anything really to sell. Of course, I've got my businesses and the hair products, but really the main aspect when you're first getting to know people is to just find ways to connect with them, how to you know, it's become kind of like these words, authenticity or give and stuff. You know, just giving first and adding value first. It's becoming like that, one of those phrases which is now annoying me, where people are saying, you've got to be your authentic self, or you don't talk about yourself, you've got to give, but there's no concept of how do you give? How do you give value to people? Yeah. So people now have got all these kind of things in their head and they think they're giving, but actually they're not. They're still pitching, they're still selling, but that's because they have no clue how to just give and add value to people.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense to you.
Yeah, it does. And the authenticity, you know, yeah, you know, you hear it everywhere. I'm not somebody who gets fed up with people. You know, people are fed up with pivot. They're fed up with authenticity. I understand why some people do. I don't mind. But I really like to call it anyway, just being you, being natural, being organic. You know what I mean? It's the, you know, it's just doing what comes naturally to you. And if what comes naturally to you isn't working, then working on the skills to upskill yourself so that what comes naturally to you is a better version of you that's going to get better results. You know what I mean? Because you can't always just be you, because if you're just you and you're not getting anywhere in life, then you've got to become a more improved you to actually try and, you know, make a difference to your life. Because otherwise, if you don't do anything different, you're going to get exactly the same results forever.
But I think we probably have a different perspective on that, because I think, yeah, you can carry on being you if you're happy. If you're happy with your life, you're happy with your job, you're happy with your you know, partner and so on, then I think that's fine. I think, you know, we need more people who are just like that. But if you've got certain goals and you're not achieving those goals, then you have to look at, you know, perhaps it is you that's going wrong. Or if it just might be you're not working with the people who like you for you. You've seen me in Clubhouse. I'm a very eccentric kind of guy.
Yeah.
Not everybody's going to like this personality, but there's a lot of people who do like this personality, and I just tend to work and vibe with them. And the others, they're nice people, but I annoy the hell out of them. So there's no point in us working together. I just work with, you know, the people here who just love me for me. They don't mind this crazy guy who wears bow ties, who thinks he's Doctor Who half the time. Yeah.
I'm the reverse of the people who don't like it, because I love eccentric people. So, you know, I gravitate towards eccentric people, because to me, life's about living life on your terms. And the people who are eccentric, are the ones who decided to not follow the crowd. They're the ones who decided to live life on their terms. So they're like me, I'm eccentric. You know what I mean? I'm an eccentric person because I'm not eccentric. I'm just me being naturally me. But to other people who are trying to, you know, follow the crowd and be the sheep and all of that, I will come across as a bit eccentric because like I'm doing things different to them. But that's just because I choose to not have to conform, but to live life on my terms.
Right, right. Do you think, Mike, just out of interest, that people who do follow the in inverted commas sheep, don't you think they're living life on their terms, that their terms is to follow and be like everybody else?
I don't think so. I think sometimes, I think there's a lot of people who choose the comfort and et cetera, but there's a lot of people as well who they've never been shown a different way, or they've never been given a different way, and they've never been encouraged by their parents to actually have the confidence in doing something on their terms. So I think sometimes they're people who have got their own limiting beliefs, they've got their own issues to deal with, and actually if you can tackle those beliefs and those issues and stuff and give them the confidence that they can stand away from the crowd and they can, you know, become their own self. You see people do it all the time. They transform into a butterfly, you know, and they become a different person. A lot of people do it in university, you know, because they're not confident as a kid, and then they get confidence when they're away from home and they flee the nest and they build a new friendship circle, and all of a sudden you see their personality, you see the real them coming out. But it takes time sometimes, and it takes encouragement, and it takes confidence and belief and all these things. And that's why I think you know, that's why I like to encourage people to think about alternative options, because I think yes, some people do like to stay comfort and, you know, comfortable and in the crowd and wherever, because it's safety in numbers and all that sort of, you know, back to our, you know, caveman days and whatever, like, you know. But, you know, you don't need to be safe in numbers these days. You know, you can go and stand on your own, and, you know, there isn't any, you know, dinosaurs or, you know, saber-tooth tigers or whatever out there trying to eat us. We all can, you know, be unique, be different, and actually make life on our own terms and get by with it and still be part of a crowd if we want to. We can be part of a crowd of people who are standing on their own and being different. You know what I mean? But to me, I think life is about grabbing it with both hands and making sure you live in a life of no regret, rather than actually getting to the end of your life and thinking, oh, you know what, I wish I did a bit more. I wish I'd tried this. I actually think the majority of people do get to that stage in their life. The vast majority of people who just did the same job forever and, you know, lived in the same place forever. And I think a lot of those people do get to the point in their life and think, well, maybe I wish I did a bit more. You know, maybe I wish I had a bit more fun, or maybe I wish I'd tried, you know, some of those extra adventures that I dreamt about but never had the confidence to do.
Maybe. I know a lot of people who've had their job and they've come out and they're retired and they've been very happy with that. So you know, for me, both are right. And if that's what they want, that's great. They see the adventures, for example, that I'm on, and some of them say, Ben, I'm living vicariously through you, you know. But it's not for them, that kind of life. And I don't believe everyone can have an entrepreneurial lifestyle. It was kind of pushed on me, Mike. And you know, I've adapted, you know, very well to that kind of lifestyle. But it wasn't something that I sought out. I never considered myself to be an entrepreneur. I never considered myself to be a business person who could grow these different areas to be incredibly profitable. There's
made a good job of it, see. So there's a lot of people out there who maybe don't think they're capable of doing it because they don't have that confidence. But I think people are capable of doing it. You know, I think everyone given the right set of circumstances and the right situation, the right opportunity, people can run with it. It's just there's so much fear in the majority of human beings to step outside that comfort zone. That's why so many don't. And I just think there should be more encouragement through the state and the schools and the system and parents and all sorts of people to actually allow them to build that confidence up so they can try something different.
Okay, so I'm going to challenge you here, Mike, a little bit. I'm an entrepreneur, that's a label that people give me. I would say that being an entrepreneur you're less likely to have a stable love life, for example.
Yeah,
that is a huge downside. Whereas if you've got a job and stuff and it's stable and you come home to your partner, or your stay at home partner, and you're looking after that side, so one partner's free to go and make the finance. It's a, you know, that lifestyle is very stable from a, you know, a partner perspective. But I've worked with many entrepreneurs, and their love lives are crap. Really crap, because they're working all the time to grow their businesses. And sometimes when things like COVID happen, they are now in huge problems, and they're working even more. So I just want to share kind of the other side. Also, when you're an entrepreneur, you have to deal with accountants, you have to deal with solicitors, to deal with people who, for whatever reason, the crazy stuff is going on in their head. They think that you are the wealthiest person in the world and you owe them money because you didn't weren't nice to them. Do you know what I mean? You know, it's not, I don't think the entrepreneurial life is for everyone. Oh. And certainly some of my friends who just wanted a more stable life for a little bit, you know, they went back, got a great job. They may have had a little side hustle, which they could run with their partner, but, you know, as something to do together. But that's what's helped them keep together. Now, I'm not saying that because I don't want people to then write in to now this podcast, Ben, you're saying that entrepreneurs can't have good partnership lives. Here's me and my partner. We're doing really well. I'm not saying that at all, but I'm saying it's more challenging.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. It's like an entrepreneur's life is more challenging in almost every aspect of it because it's not that stable structure. And that's why it's more challenging, because, you know, the other alternative way is a path well trodden. So everybody knows the path. Everybody knows the way it works, and it's very comfortable. It's very safe and all of that. And definitely things like relationships. You know, if you're married to your entrepreneurial life, like most entrepreneurs are, then a partner has to fit into that. You know what I mean? Like I actually myself have chosen, you know, probably the entrepreneurial life over two of my relationships. You know what I mean? Yeah. Because I care about making the game of life a success the way I see it on my entrepreneurial terms, probably more than I do about a partner, you know, or at least a partner who can't join me on that entrepreneurial journey, which is why I've been looking for an entrepreneurial partner, one that you can actually partner together with in life and in business, you know? But they are hard to find, you know what I mean? Because the women are less entrepreneurial than men generally, so it's a smaller percentage of...
Oh, be very careful, Mike.
No, I just...
Be very careful that I work with a lot of women entrepreneurial groups. I'm telling you, every one of my businesses... Yeah. Apart from one where I had the woman in charge of running the business did very, very well. And the one that didn't do so well is because she got involved with one of the directors who was not a very nice person. And I would never have had him as a director, but one of my co-directors had that guy there. He was not. And that whole business went to pot later on. I got out. I sold the shares.
Women are generally better than men in business and in life and in most things. They're
just be careful about saying men are better entrepreneurial.
We may
take more risks, Mike, but we also lose a lot because we take those risks. The women have analysed it much better than us.
That's what I'm saying. I never said men are better entrepreneurs than women. I said there are more men entrepreneurs than women, so the ratio is different. There are more men entrepreneurs than women because women are less likely to take risks, so therefore women play a safer game, and that can be why they can be strategically better a lot of the time, like you say. That's why if you have a look at the highest wealth individuals in the world, most of them are male, because males will take the bigger risk. But actually, there's probably more failed entrepreneurs than are male, just as well as there are more bigger entrepreneurs, because the women sit in the middle somewhere because of their sense, because they're less risk takers. But I never said
anything to women. That, Mike. I want to challenge that. I would say there are more male men in the billionaire category because of patriarchal society, which are being demolished at the moment.
Yeah, right?
So today, so the previous kind of world, it was like, if you're a woman in business, it was like, what's wrong with you? Why aren't you at home? Why don't you want kids? You know, all that kind of crap. Yeah.
That's definitely influenced it as well. But I would say the risk taking is a big part of it as well. You know what I mean? Because women are less likely to take, you know, really big risks, whereas men are more likely to, because men don't really think about other people's, the effect on other people, etc., as women think about, you know, the effect on all other people. So that's why I think women make great leaders, because women do think about, you know, people more so than the males do, you know. So there's all sorts of different characteristics of males and females and races and ethnicities and ages and all sorts of things. There are different characteristics. But you do find in entrepreneurialism, for me, I find in my experience, as somebody who goes networking and mixes with a lot of entrepreneurs, I find there are more males than there are females, although it's definitely starting to balance itself up, and there's a lot of great things happening to do that. But it's definitely, as a ratio, I would say there's definitely more male entrepreneurs than female. And that means then, as a ratio, it's a harder thing to try and find a female entrepreneur, because, you know, there's more male entrepreneurs looking for them, you know. But, but I didn't say anything about female entrepreneurs. I used to have a son, 17 people, and 12 of them were women and 5 of them were men. So, you know, I got no issues with you know, women in their business skills and all of that.
No, I know you're a very inclusive person, Mike. It was just your statistics.
That's why I think this year
it was just your statistics I'm challenging, not your perspective on people. No. Just so the podcast, the audience know, you know, from my perspective, having seen Mike in action on multiple times, Mike is a very, very inclusive person. He loves people for being people. It doesn't matter whether you're a man, woman, a black, Asian, green, orange, an alien. You could be a dragon. You could be a Welsh dragon, for all he cares. As long as you've got a good soul, Mike loves you to pieces and will do anything to help you. So Mike, I've publicly said that now.
I know, but that, you know, that is the truth at the end of the day. It makes no difference to me. But yeah, what I love is, and I love entrepreneurs, female, you know, male, anything. I love entrepreneurs because, you know, entrepreneurs are the ones who make the difference to the world, really. You know, it's entrepreneurs that, you know, they're the ones who will get us through the pandemic. They're the ones who, you know, are responsible for growing the economy. They're the ones who, you know, it's not the government to me. It's not the government. It's not, you know, the people who are in jobs generally, because they just do what the entrepreneurs are paying and shaping to happen. You know, the movers and the shakers of the world, the people who really have the control of the world are big, you know, the entrepreneurs in charge of big business. But it's the mass, the massive entrepreneurs all over the world that really do make a difference to this world and this planet. They're the thinkers, they're the doers, they're the movers and the shakers. And so, I love entrepreneurs because they're the ones who've got the balls to back themselves and not just, you know, go and chase someone else's dream for a comfortable sort of spell, but actually, you know, they're the ones who are willing to be the pioneers and the leaders and actually make things happen, just like, you know, you with this COVID project and stuff. Like, you know, this is, you know, just like the people in the pandemic who went to doing PPE and the hospital equipment and all that sort of stuff. I love the entrepreneurial spirit and the entrepreneurial nature to just get stuck in and make a difference, like, you know.
Yeah, so here is an aspect of entrepreneurialism. When you see a disaster, you look at the opportunity of the disaster. And one of the thought processes here of why, for example, I got involved with these units that, so the diagram behind me, for those people who are just listeners, they're not viewing this on YouTube or anything, behind me is a diagram of what we call a Placide reactor. And what a reactor does is it creates mini micro lightning bolts. So any air with particles that comes through it, the lightning hits those particles and splits them. Now those particles include viruses such as coronavirus. So it literally eliminates coronavirus. It also eliminates allergenic pollen and chemicals. And one of the problems with the pandemic is that a lot of people have used a lot of cleaning materials kind of almost regularly in the hospitals to try and ensure that, you know, there is no virus on surfaces. But a side effect of that is now we've created a lot more, for example, bleach and the chemicals in the air, which is actually impacts your lungs and can create more secondary infections in your immunity. So an entrepreneur isn't just thinking, okay, first of all, there's a disaster. How can I help? How can I reduce what's going on? But they're also thinking a little bit beyond that. So here it is in my head. I'm thinking this is a travesty. People have suffered from this lockdown, not just the virus, domestic violence going up. Loneliness has caused people to take to drugs and alcohol, just a whole bunch of other issues. Whereas if the pubs and the restaurants and the offices were kept open and they still had their job, they'd still be out there contributing to other people and feeling good about themselves generally. So beyond this, if these products get adopted in not just the UK but around the world, then we can create a society where it doesn't matter how many virus attacks we have, that we have now devices that will massively reduce the infection rate because it's destroying these viruses as they come out. And if, you know, depending on whether you're a conspiracy theory or not, if this is a man-made generated virus, again, this unit is still going to kill it. It doesn't matter whether it's real or not. So an entrepreneur is also not just dealing with the reality of situations. They're also thinking a little bit beyond. They're thinking, well, what if it is real? What if it was something that went wrong, some experiment that went wrong, as some of the conspiracy theorists will think? Well, it still works. It still destroys whatever is in the air to allow people to work freely within their offices and reduce that infection rate. And that's the entrepreneurial spirit. It's not sitting at home thinking, crap, my business has been devastated, I've lost money here, and so on. You're thinking, what are the opportunities here? Sure, we might go and hide for a bit because we've lost money or we've lost friends. You know, the epidemic has hurt a lot of us, not just financially, but emotionally. We've lost loved ones and so on. So we might go and cry and hide in our duvet for a few days or a week or a month, whatever. But afterwards, we'll get out and think, okay, what can we do about this? How can we help society move forward and ensure a tragic situation like this never happens again? Does that make sense what I'm sharing here, Mike?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, well, that's it. Yeah, entrepreneurs are problem solvers. They're big picture thinkers. They're strategists, and they put plans in action and teams in place to actually then solve those problems. And yeah, that's exactly the difference between the businesses. There's been businesses you speak to, and they say, I couldn't pivot online. You know, I'm a gym, I'm closed, I can't pivot online. Well, you know, why aren't you doing online gym classes? Or, you know what I mean? Some people are just stubborn, you know what I mean? And they just can't think creatively. And they won't listen to other advice or whatever. So sometimes you give people ideas and go, okay, have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? Have you thought about this? And they're like, oh, no, I haven't, or I can't do this, or I can't do that. Sometimes some people's answer to everything is no, and other people's answer to everything is yes. And often the difference in your appreciation of the answer and of the problem, if you think you can do something, you can. And if you don't think you can do something, you can't. So, you know, you either can or you can't. Either way, you're right, is the way Henry Ford put it. And that's why the people who have grown through the pandemic are the ones who think they can, and they've found a way to do and to make it happen. And the ones who have struggled in the pandemic are the ones who've used excuses like, I can't do this, I can't do that, I can't do this, you know, the government's doing this. And they pass on the responsibility to others rather than take the responsibility on themselves, which is ultimately, you know, whether your business is doing well or not, whatever's going on externally, it's still your responsibility. It's still your business. It's no one else's business. It's your business. So nobody else can be, you know, the person who's making the decisions. Only you can.
Yeah, and I think, Mike, that there's a great difference between being a business owner and an entrepreneur, because there's a lot of business owners, as you say, who've just followed a path, and that's the only thing they know, and it makes their money in under certain conditions. But as soon as a different, either political or in this case a pandemic, a more disease oriented disaster has happened, they can't cope with that, because they're not in that kind of entrepreneurial spirit. I think from my perspective, business owners should constantly be looking at other ways and testing and trying them. And sometimes it's difficult, because the older you get, yeah, it's harder just to take on those newer experiences, especially if your business has been going successfully until you hit a wall. So go out, get it wrong, lose money a little bit, yeah, find out who the scam business mentors are, but just experiment and grow, because even when you pay for bad advice, you would learn something anyway.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? And that way you don't get stuck into just being a business owner. You get stuck in, you evolve into being able to grow your mind to think critically. And also, maybe you can't move as fast as other people in switching your business around, but you will eventually get there. I'll give you an example of a few people I know who had a business, which was, you know, which is very social, but they've managed to change it around. So he's actually a friend of a friend, and he makes stage background kind of, you know, the background for theater and films and stuff. That's what he creates. And he has 9 trucks and a massive, massive warehouse to do that, right? Now, when the pandemic hit, his warehouse is full of all the background scenery that he created for theaters, and he can't use any of it because there's no theater. There are no films in that area being produced, and because all the films have changed the way they do things. So he found out that a lot of people are working from home, and he evolved his business, first of all, to storing stuff in that massive warehouse he had, and to create these background scenery in people's garages, which he would help change into an office, because you know, a lot of families don't want to work in the home where the kids are running around and stuff like that. And as a result of that, his business actually did really much better than he was just doing background scenery. He's now doing it in for your offices. How amazing is that? Yeah. Another friend of mine, he does these kind of scavenge hunts in London. That's very good. And he has little clues, and then you lead it, and all the groups go out, and you have a kind of a person who takes them around and gives them clues when they're getting stuck. So you can't do that anymore. So he builds an online platform to do that. And because his online platform was so cool, because he's got little rooms that people can go into and have chats with their friends, his platform is a third party one, which was better than, for example, Zoom, which where you can do these things, and has been adopted by several people to have run their events. How amazing is that? Like, you and Mike, we could be in an online event of like 300 people, and you and I might want to just go have a chat. And so we would click a button with each other, and we just go have a chat, rather than an admin creating these breakout rooms. We can just go and have a chat. We can watch the screens of the events happening, you know, if we need to go back into the main hallway, but we can have a chat outside of that.
Yeah. What's the name of that system, by the way? Because I'm looking for a system like that. I've looked at Remo and Hopin, but I'm currently...
Why don't I just connect you two? Because I only know what he's done. He had me present in one of his online quiz shows. So you see me being Doctor Who, yeah. And giving the question, if you like. So I'm very happy to connect you two, Mike.
You know, I'm really keen to do some sort of like online event type system. I'm just trying to find the right event system to do the event on, because I want it to be more interactive than just a Zoom or whatever. But yeah, that'd be great. And just to finish as well, I know you've done a bit of speaking and you spoke at TED a few times and that sort of thing. Tell everyone a little bit about how you got into doing that and how it went and all of that, because I know there's always people looking to do those sort of things, a bit of advice or something maybe. And also, you're also a bit in the acting world as well, I know. So tell everyone a little bit about that as well and how that's going, because, again, there's lots of people like out there all the time looking to get into those sort of areas.
Well, so there are two questions here, being a TEDx speaker and also being an actor. The easier one is for me to just share about the TEDx area. There's multiple ways of getting in. For example, several of my friends have got in just because they knew the organizers of the TEDx, right? Yeah. And they are able to share their message very well. So that's one way. The other way is to just go to the TED platform and fill in the application forms, right? And it's simply that. The third way is to get a PR agent. So I've done two of those ways. I've got a PR agent, and I have a friend who had the TEDx franchise. Although she decided, because she had issues with her life, so she couldn't move forward with that, but I would have been a speaker there. Get a PR person. Mine cost me, I think it was $1,000 a month, and they filled in all my application forms, so I didn't need to deal with that aspect. So those are three ways to get in. The fourth way is, you know, I invited a random person to come on to one of the talks that I gave. And that TEDx talk is called Social Magnetism. I'd just like to defocus the conversation and talk a little bit about social magnetism for a second. Mm-hmm. The TED talk on social magnetism went viral on its own. Because what that looks at is coming back right back to our first discussion that kind of like Mike and I were talking about in those touch points and connecting with people in business. The talk came out of the fact that I saw a lot of people who would come to events and they'd go and they'd leave those events kind of empty-handed. Yeah? No, they, for whatever reason, nobody kind of vibed with you. And there's a lot of reasons why that could be. You could be an introvert, you don't know how to network, or you could have just constantly throwing your business and what you want at people. And of course, immediately you do that, you alienate them. So that's what that talk came out of. It was business is a people sport. And you have to know, first of all, who you are and the value and the wonderful, amazing person that you are. And two, out of that amazingness of understanding who you are, overflows this kind of gratitude that you want to bless other people, you want to help them in their lives. And the third aspect is there are some really horrible people out there. And you need to just walk, not try to, like, you know, there's a terrible, terrible person out there who, from my perspective, scams a lot of people. And I was trying to help him. I was trying to help him fix whatever was going on in his heart, because he has the ability to really reach out and impact many, many people. But he just, for whatever reason, just wasn't interested. Yeah. And I should have walked ages ago. Same with a lot of business partners, just walked rather than wasting my valuable time with them. So that's what that TED talk came out of. And it would help you, any of the listeners and the viewers, tremendously if you're working in a business, or even if you just want a great career, or you're looking for a date and you've been single for a long time, it'll help you tremendously. The second question that Mike asked about was being an actor. Now, in my life, I was not a very confident person, and I was told a lot of things that I couldn't do. For example, Ben, you will never be able to write. You know, four or five English teachers told me that. Today, I'm a very well-respected writer, and I've made a lot of money through my writings. These are business writings and how-to writings. So being an editor for magazines and writing books. The second thing I was told was that, you know, I'd never be able to really be able to speak on stages. Now, yet I've today spoken on stages up to 14,000 people. So these are some things that I was told I couldn't do, wouldn't understand business. In fact, when I developed the property portfolio, some relatives said that I was only lucky because another relative was helping me. In fact, actually, I was helping them. And now that 10 years has gone since that incident, they've seen that my property business has grown and theirs has gone nowhere. So the truth eventually came out. So that was another thing that they told me I'd never be able to do is grow a property business. Now, the last thing was being an actor. This is one of the hardest things you could do if you want to be an A-lister. You can make a decent money being an actor, but it is a hard, hard, hard industry. It's the last thing that I need to get through for my own, you know, just to see if I can do this. Yeah. And that's why I focus now a lot of my efforts and focus to deal with one of the last things that I was told I could never do. And by the way, I don't think people were wrong at the time. Probably I couldn't have done any of those things because I didn't have any self-confidence. I didn't know how to connect with people. So they were right. But just because they were right then doesn't mean they're going to be right tomorrow or the day after or the day after that. And if you can somehow grow your business or grow yourself and understand that way back right at the start of this conversation, Mike's mentioned the compound effect of experience, then you will eventually get there. My writing got better and better and better until one day, you know, people all over the world are asking me to either ghostwrite or edit or write articles for them. My stage presence grew and grew until today. People are asking me to MC their shows. They're asking me to come on and share 15 minutes, an hour, whatever of business or life experience that will help people. The acting side is hard, and I'm using the exactly what I shared in the TEDx broadcast to get there. I don't want to say I can give anyone any advice there because it is, you've got the traditional way of going through and being an equity member and going and getting education, which I've done. But there are certain other blockages that will prevent you. That's not internal blockages. These are external blockages that may prevent you from getting where you want to go. So you need to really understand that whole social magnetism, network with people, and you will be able to get more likely to get great roles that way. And I'll give you an example. You know, I was asked to present a show on a certain topic. And, you know, for that, I was paid roughly $200,000 for 2 months for that. But I would never have got that if I'd gone the traditional way of being an actor. All right. I've had little roles. I've played roles on theatre productions and so on. So I'm not right there yet, but this is my new trajectory.
Yeah. It's just the same as me. It's like when I decided to become a global speaker, you know, I wasn't in a position to get onto the top stages on the planet. I just knew I was on a position to start my journey towards the top stages of the planet. And if you're willing to keep learning and listening and growing and developing, then you've got much more chance of getting there. But also, if you're willing to be a bit strategic and to try and go a unique route, then you're competing with a lot less people. So your odds, your probability, your statistics, your potential chance of succeeding become greater because you're doing it a different way. And so I'm a big fan of that. I'm a big fan when everyone zigs, I like to zag. And so if everyone else is going that way, I want to find out, okay, how can I do it this way? And if you can do that, I find you're competing with a lot less people and your chance of success increases quite substantially, which is why I believe lefties, creatives, dyslexics, autism, people, you know, they're a little bit different than the norm. That's why they tend to do well, bipolar people tend to do well in the entrepreneurial assessment because often entrepreneurs who've succeeded on a big level have often gone about things very different than the way the majority have gone about it.
You know, I love what you were saying there. And if you are feeling like you are the underdog, that is actually your superpower, because less people view you as a competitor, so they will never see you coming. I love that concept. And the other concept you just shared there, Mike, about people who are high up the autistic scale, that means they're highly focused, okay? If you've got dyslexia, it means that you can look at situations very, very differently to other people. And that means you're more likely to come up with solutions to someone who doesn't have that superpower of being dyslexic. If you're bipolar, it means that you have the ability to essentially switch your character. And sometimes when one of your characters is being kind of like put upon, you almost need that kind of like that angry character to prevent you constantly being put upon. By being put upon, I just mean people abusing your energy and your kindness.
Yeah.
So they're just really great strengths you've shared, Mike, whereas society may think, oh, you're like this, you know, so you'll never be successful. But just use those aspects of yourself to your benefit. If you've suffered from ADHD, ADHD, you know, attention deficit, then understand that you would be great in creating lots and lots of teams. And by having teams around you, they will help you grow faster than you working as a solopreneur.
Yeah, I was speaking to someone the other day who had always been told hyperactiveness was bad. And I said, well, why is it bad? It basically means you can do more than everyone else. Why is that bad? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, so sometimes people, they get told one thing and given one narrative, and all they're going to do is just change the narrative.
Yeah, you're so right, Mike. Absolutely right. Yeah. So have we come to a wonderful natural conclusion?
Yeah, I think we have. Is there any way, because I know you don't do these things to drive people anywhere or to or to sell anything or whatever, but, you know, people do want to engage and that sort of thing. So, you know, just give them a couple of engagement points where they can connect with you or look at some of the work that you do, and then we can call it a day.
Well, I guess, you know, apart from the TEDx, you know, people just putting social magnetism in the, you know, in your internet search, all of that will find all my work there. I guess the my main focus at the moment is if you can find ways to get our technology that kills COVID into offices and hospitals, then, you know, I'm very, very happy to engage there. I'm personally not trying to make any money out of this, although my directors, my co-directors may want to make a few pennies out of that. But obviously, you know, I'm very much about trying to give back to people in this kind of environment. And if we can help you, you know, give you a referral fee or whatever it is, then very, very pleased to do that.
Yeah, brilliant.
So to find out some of the, if you like, the literature we have on these units, which kill COVID, then please go to bvbuster.com. That's B for Bravo, V for verification. Buster, B for brilliant, U for underdog, S for super, T for tremendous, E for excellent, R for ridiculous, and .com.
Yeah, brilliant. And obviously, you're at Ben Chai on Clubhouse, and I guess, you know, Ben Chai can be found on LinkedIn and Instagram and Facebook and all the usual places.
Correct. Yeah. So Ben Chai, that's BenChai.
Yeah. Brilliant. And yeah, that's pretty much all we need to do. Now, I actually just had an idea for you as well. You should do some Clubhouse artificial intelligence, because then that would suit your surname.
My surname. I don't know, but, you know, I was thrown out of one, not thrown, I was put back in the audience because I started speaking, you know, I was doing one some of my crazy raps, and they thought I was just an automated robot. So they thought, oh, it's kind of one of those ghost apps that are in the room.
Fair enough.
And then they apologized tremendously. Oh, we thought you were some AI.
Well, I had a chap in my room the other day. His name's Hussein, and he's from Iran, and he sounds like a robot when he talks, and it's fascinating. I love it. So every time he speaks, I think is that like AI or whatever? But it's not. You can tell it's human, but it just sounds very much like Wally or whatever. You know, the Disney robot.
I love Hussein. Actually, a lot of the people in your room, they don't really know how to take me when I'm initially talking with them. And then some of them have actually followed me from room to room. There's this guy called, I think it's Andrew, and then he comes on the stage. Ben's incredibly funny. I didn't understand him now. And I'm seeing him, he's doing this in all your rooms. Andrew, you've just outed me.
Yeah, well, if they don't know you and they see you for the first time, you just confuse, you bamboozle them, like, you know, because, you know, you can be a bit out there and a bit eccentric and a bit unusual. And sometimes people don't know, they don't know if it's, you know, humor or real or whatever, like, you know, but once they get to know you, they know, oh yeah, that's just Ben, you know, but yeah, sometimes
it's actually more than just Ben. I'm actually educating people through humor, because if you challenge them directly, you're going to change the vibe of the room, and you don't want to create an argument. Yeah. So really that's the center. I'm letting you in on a secret, Mike. This is what I'm doing. Rather than saying, actually, I disagree with what you're saying.
Yeah.
there's a room that I'd like to just give a shout out to Jennifer. I think her surname's Hammond. Do you know, she came into our room and she was going, yay!
Yeah, the yay room, Jennifer's yay room. Yeah.
So could we just do a yay for her in this podcast? Yeah.
I love Jennifer.
You ready? One, two, three. Yay!
I love Jennifer. She's awesome. She's awesome. I love her positive energy. Like, you know, I got a lot of positive energy myself anyway. So, you know, they say birds of a feather flock together. I'm not as high energy as Jennifer, although I am high energy in a natural, organic way. But she's just like high energy in your face, like, you know.
Yeah. Yay!
I love that. Yay! You know, it makes my day. So yeah.
She was laughing because when she created the Yay Room, apparently I wasn't there. But a lot of people were saying, can we do what Ben did in Mike's room? And she's saying, what did we do? He said he just unmiked everybody and got them all to go, yay.
That's good. I suggested to her she should do 101 ways to say yay, you know, like a yay a day keeps the doctor away and stuff like that. And I think she might be working on that now.
Oh, so. My goodness, Mike, you are. I was saying to her the other day, it would be crazy if she and I were on a street, because you know how I am, and I'd be happy going yay walking down the street, and I think she'd be the same. And we'd have a film crew just to see what people's reactions are. We're going yay, yay, yay.
That would make a good series, like doing a yay in Times Square and a yay.
Yeah, exactly, because I was saying to her, I was in St. Louis when they were getting in the Guinness Book of World Records for people doing the most Macarena, you know, the Macarena song dance. And I was saying, it'd be great if we did the same thing and create a flash mob for yay.
The world's biggest yay, or yay day. The world's biggest yay on yay day. I'm gonna write that one down.
And here's the interesting thing, because I'm not particularly a positive or negative person. Yeah, because I think I work in reality. And look how to improve the reality of things. So I'll say it how it is. But when you say yay, like, and do it with all your energy, just in your own room, so you don't have to have people looking at you and thinking, what are you doing? But do it five times and shout, yay! Something really changes in your heart.
Yeah, well, it's very similar to the laughing yoga. You know, if you laugh, if you make yourself laugh, like I sit there like thinking, is this real, right? And thinking, and then force laughing. And before you know it, you're just laughing. I just can't stop laughing because it's contagious, like, you know what I mean? But it's also abstract, and I love the abstract nature of it. So that makes me laugh anyway, because it's just out there, isn't it? It's just...
It really is. I have to say, I do prefer the yay, because when you start laughing, you do, even the yay sounds initially, but it's very difficult when you just go, yay, not to feel anything. Whereas laughing, when you start doing the laughing yoga, initially you start out feeling, oh, this is, before you really get into it. So yay is just a really quick way of and I think actually we should do that. I'll speak to the laughing yoga instructors. Get people to say yay 5 times with all their energy and then go into the laughing. Yeah. I think people are more likely to do that and feel it.
Well, definitely works. I used to run telesales teams, and you know, one of the big things in telesales environments is the smile, because they can pick up the smile on the other side of the phone. You know, your whole demeanor changes if you're smiling and if you're happy and the muscles are working and it sends off the hormones and all that something, and that comes across in your tonality and then in how, you know, how you sound. You know, if people sound happy, you want to speak to them. If they sound miserable and down in the dumps and boring and, you know, like there's in the reading of a script and stuff, you just want to ignore them, you know what I mean? You just can't be bothered engaging with them.
Mike, you know, you see, every time people say things like you've just said to me, my entrepreneurial mind goes into overdrive, and I now I want to phone you up, and see whether you can tell whether I'm smiling or not.
You definitely can, honestly.
Because I want to see if I can replicate the same kind of energy without me smiling. So that's my entrepreneurial thing. I wonder if I can do this.
It's the same as with when everyone's wearing their masks, you know, you can smile with your eyes. Yeah. And so like when I'm out and about, I still smile at people. Like some people might think, oh, I've got a mask on, what's the point of smiling? I still smile.
Mike, it's your sunglasses that nobody can tell whether you're smiling or not. So yeah, I think I'll just put it out there. And I know why, especially when you're doing these broadcasts, because I've got a big light shining at me. Yes, exactly, Mike. So I've got a big light shining at me, which hurts my eyes. So I get why you're wearing your sunglasses.
I wear my sunglasses. It's part of my image. It's part of my brand. So that's what I wear now. That's the only reason, really. You know, I started wearing them in the summer networking once, and it became part of my brand, and so I just kept it. You know, it's been like the drag. So the glasses found me, just like the Welsh dragon found me. I've always been Welsh patriotic, but I only started being called the Welsh dragon since the start of Clubhouse, because obviously I do a lot of networking in Wales, and in Wales, I'm just another Welsh dragon in amongst all the other Welsh dragons. But when I'm global, I'm the Welsh dragon, you know? When people think of the Welsh dragon in America, or, you know, other than maybe a couple of sports people that may have been given the nickname over the years or whatever, I'm the Welsh dragon. I'm the only Welsh dragon. Whereas in Wales, I'm just another Welsh person, you know? So
I love it. I love your differentiator, Mike.
Yeah. Well, actually, the sunglasses allow me to use the smiley face with the sunglasses on as an icon, and the Welsh dragon allows me to use the fire icons as a icon. So they all come in useful for helping with your social media and your content standing out a bit. And I stick the smiley face on, I stick the fire on, I stick the microphone and the Armstrong, because Mike Armstrong. So I've got loads of little you know, icons and stuff, which I'm going to be putting on all my merchandise and selling soon. So, you know.
Great. That sounds amazing. I'm looking forward to seeing some of them.
Yeah. And I'm going to obviously do a load of Screw the Big Rooms merch as well. I've got, I've got T-shirts and hoodies and bags and stuff I'm working on at the moment. So, it's going to be good.
So Mike, let's just thank all our audience for listening.
Yeah.
And if you've found this useful, please do write a comment or send a comment in. And if there's anything that we can do to help you, again, please do reach out to Mike and myself.
Yeah, brilliant. And thank you very much for coming on my podcast again and sharing more of your wisdom.
Thank you. And thank you so much for having me, Mike, not just on your podcast, but in your rooms. I do have a lot of fun with the people in your rooms. And because it's a smaller room, you know, there's a lot more I can do than with a larger room where people are competing to you know, shout over each other. So it's fantastic.
Brilliant. Well, I look forward to seeing you either when I'm in London in July or when I'm in Essex in August, and getting to meet you in the real world and in the flesh, and have some more fun with you.
Yeah, definitely. If you can cope, that'd be fine. Not everybody can cope with me standing on tables in hotels, Mike. So I'm just giving you some advance warning.
I've got a friend who likes to do Pavarotti in the middle of a restaurant when it's quiet at the dinner table. So, you know, don't worry. I'm used to awkward social experiences. And I do them myself, but it usually takes me about, say, 8 ciders before I start jumping on tables. But once I've had 8 ciders, watch out. I'll be joining you wherever you are.
No, I'm sorry. Alcohol is cheating. If you Google Ben Chine extreme reading, you will see me doing crazy stuff, just reading aloud in strange places, like aeroplanes.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Thank you again, Mike.
Yeah, have a great day, okay? All the best. Bye-bye. Yeah,
you too. Thanks again.
Bye.